Random House Audio presents Blood Test by Jonathan Kellerman. Read for you by John Rubenstein.
I sat in the courtroom and watched Richard Moody get the bad news from the judge. Moody'd come dressed for the occasion in a chocolate polyester suit, canary yellow shirt, and lizard skin boots. The bailiff at the rear of the room held his gaze on Moody. As a result of my warning, he'd been careful to keep the Moodys apart all afternoon and had gone so far as to frisk Richard. "Mr. Moody," Judge Diane Sevier said, "I want you to listen very carefully to what I'm going to say." Moody started to assume an aggressive body posture, hunching his shoulders and narrowing his eyes, but his attorney nudged him and he loosened up and forced a smile. "I've heard testimony from Dr. Dashoff and Dr. Delaware," said the judge. "I've spoken to your children. I've heard your allegations against Mrs. Moody. I've learned of your instructions to your children to run away from their mother so you could rescue them." She paused and leaned forward. "You've got serious emotional problems, sir, and psychotherapy is essential, a good deal of it. My order is that you have no further contact with your children until I see psychiatric evidence that you are no longer a threat to yourself or to others, when the death threats and talk of suicide cease, and you have accepted the reality of this divorce and are able to support Mrs. Moody in the raising of the children. Should you get to that point, the court will call upon Dr. Delaware to set up a schedule of monitored visitation." "Judge," said Moody, the bass voice dry and strained, "you don't understand. Those kids, they're my life." The judge regarded him with compassion. "I do understand, sir. I understand that you love your children, that your life is in shambles. But what you need to understand, the whole point of the psychiatric testimony, is that children can't be responsible for anyone's life. They can't raise you. You need to be able to raise them. And right now you can't. You need help." The next quarter hour was spent on property settlement. I had no need to listen to the distribution of the meager estate of Darlene and Richard Moody, and would have left, but Mal Worthy, the wife's lawyer and a friend of mine, had said he wanted to talk to me afterward. When the legal mumbling was over, Judge Sevier took off her glasses and ended the hearing. She looked my way and smiled. "I'd like to see you in chambers for a moment, if you've got the time, Dr. Delaware." I smiled back and nodded. She swept out of the courtroom. The bailiff ushered Moody out. Mal scooped up handfuls of documents. "Thanks for your help, Alex," he said. "It wasn't fun," I said. "No, the ugly ones aren't. I won't say it pains me to dispose of a turkey like Mr. Moody. Regards to the lady judge." Her chambers were done in mahogany and rose. She sat behind a glass-topped, carved wood desk, upon which stood a crystal vase filled with gladiolus. On the wall were several photographs of two teenage boys. "How about some wine?" she asked, unlatching the doors of a credenza carved to match the desk.
"My pleasure, Your Honor."
"In here, Diane. Is it Alexander?"
"Alex is fine."
She poured red wine into glasses. "To justice," she said. We drank in silence. She finished before I did and set down her glass. "I want to talk to you about the Moodys. Alex, are those children going to be all right?"
"I've asked myself the same thing," I said. "It depends on whether or not the parents get their act together."
She clicked her nails against the rim of the wine glass. "Do you think he'll kill her?"
"He could do it," I said. "The man's unstable and profoundly depressed. When he gets low, he gets nasty, and he's never been lower than right now. If he gets in a killing mood, she'd be the obvious target. And her boyfriend, Conley."
"Well," she said, "one must be philosophical. If he kills her, it's because she picked the wrong guy. Just as long as he doesn't kill someone innocent, like you or me."
It was hard to tell if she was being serious or not. "It's something I think about," she said. "Some loser taking out his troubles on me. You ever worry about it?"
"Not really. When I was clinically active, most of my patients were nice kids from nice families. Not much potential for mayhem there. I've been pretty much retired for the last couple of years."
"But now you're doing forensic work."
"On a limited basis. I accept consultations from attorneys I trust, which narrows the field substantially, and I get some directly from judges. I'm not hustling. If the referrals come, okay. If not, I can always find things to do."
"Rich kid, huh?" she said.
"Far from it. But I made a few good investments. If I don't get sucked into a Rodeo Drive mentality, I'm okay." She smiled.
"If you want more cases, I'll spread the word."
She paused.
"Do you have a lady friend, Alex?"
"Yes. She's in Japan now. The bosses of a conglomerate over there are talking with her about mass-producing a guitar she created."
"You miss her?"
"Yes, very much."
"Figures," she said good-naturedly. "The good ones get snapped up."
She rose to indicate the audience was concluded.
"Good to meet you, Alex."
"My pleasure, Diane." Her handshake was firm and dry. My Seville had cooked in the open parking lot, and I pulled my hand away from the heat of the door handle. Midway through the motion, I sensed his presence and turned to face him.
"Excuse me, Doc."
His forehead was sweat-glossed, and the canary-colored shirt had darkened to mustard under the arms. "I can't talk now, Mr. Moody," I said.
Just a sec, Doc. Just let me connect with you, huh? Let me zero in on some main points. Communicate, you know."
I turned away, and his hard brown hand closed on my wrist. "Please let go, Mr. Moody," I said with forced patience. He smiled.
"Hey, Doc, I just want to talk, state my case."
"I can't do anything for you. Let go of my arm." He tightened his grip. I put my car keys in my pocket and reached around to pry his fingers loose, but his strength was phenomenal.
"Okay, I'll listen to you, but first, let go so I can concentrate on what you have to say."
He thought about it for a second, then released my wrist.
"I'm listening," I said.
"Okay, okay, okay."
His head bobbed. "Just gotta connect with you, Doc. Show you I got plans. Now you go in there and tell that to the bitch in black. Straighten her out. Tell her I gotta have those kids."
"I can't do that. You're under a lot of stress. You're not ready to take care of them, Mr. Moody. You're a manic depressive and you need help badly."
"I can handle it. I got plans. Get a trailer, take him to the country, teach him to survive. Get away from scumbags like him and their mother until she gets straightened out. Tell that bitch in black. You screwed me up. You fix it, head shrinker."
"Mr. Moody, Richard, you need help. I won't do anything for you until you get it." He sputtered, sprayed me with saliva, and jacked upward viciously with his knee, a classic street brawler's move. It was one of the gambits I'd figured him for, and I swiveled so that all he made contact with was gabardine. The miss threw him off balance, and he stumbled. I jumped in the Seville and spun out. I caught a glimpse of him in the rearview mirror. He was sitting on the asphalt, head in hands, rocking back and forth, weeping. The big black and gold koi was the first to surface. But the other fish soon followed, and within seconds all 14 of them were sticking whiskered snouts out of the water and gobbling down food pellets as fast as I tossed them in. The pond and surrounding garden refuge had been a gift from my girlfriend Robin. I could stand on the deck that bisected the two levels of my house and look down on the pond, or I could descend to the floor of the garden and sit by the water's edge, feeding the fish, the surface breaking gently in concentric waves. Now I listened to the gurgling of the waterfall and put aside the memory of Richard Moody's debasement. The first time the phone rang, I was in the middle of dinner and I ignored it.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?